Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. My name is Maddie Alm. I am the registered dietitian and elite runner behind Fueling Forward and behind the podcast, and I'm really excited that you're here today. This podcast is something that has been on my mind for several years. I would call it a passion project, something that I've been really pulled to get started. But of course, whenever you're starting a new project, it can be really intimidating. There can be a really big learning curve. So it took me a while to actually execute this. So I would say bear with me as I'm learning how to be a podcast host, how to create a podcast. But ultimately, I decided that my potential fears or hesitations about doing this podcast did not outweigh the potential benefit of having this podcast. And I would say, especially over the last few years, as I've really tried to grow on social media, hearing from you guys about some of the challenges that you run into on a daily basis when it comes to nutrition and performance. And then on the other hand, the athletes that I work with. So I've been a dietitian for over 5 years. I've worked with over 400 athletes, and I've seen a lot of very similar challenges. A lot of the issues with sports nutrition stem from misinformation, maybe making some mistakes that we think are going to help us that end up being more harmful than helpful, hearing bad information given to us from teammates, from coaches, from parents, from other runners. And it's often leads to this poor relationship with food or just feeling so lost and confused that it's just better not to think about it at all. And so that's really why I'm here. That's why I created this podcast. I really wanted to create a space for athletes to share their nutrition-related experiences, both positive and negative. I really want to create a place where athletes can learn from each other and learn from me, a dietitian and an athlete, you know, somebody who is qualified to give nutrition advice, just to kind of help you weed through all the information that's out there. So that's really why I wanted to create this podcast. I think that having these conversations are hugely important. Sometimes they can be uncomfortable, sometimes they can be hard to hear, but I do think that it's something that a lot of us could benefit from, just having this community, this space where we want to prioritize taking care of our bodies, you know, challenging the norm that female athletes should be eating less or should be smaller, or it's okay if you don't have your period. You know, these are topics that I think are hugely important to discuss, both for female athletes and then people that work with them. And even athletes who aren't female athletes, just generally athletes, I think endurance athletes, we run into a lot of the same challenges when it comes to fueling and a lot of the same misinformation that leads us down a path that's more detrimental to our performance. So here at the Fueling Forward podcast, we believe in fueling your body. We believe in nourishing your body, taking care of your body, and finding the right way to do things and understanding that the right way for you might be different than the right way for a teammate, a friend, you know, even a coach who ran in the 70s and did things in a wildly different way. That's okay. But I think, you know, again, empowering each other, empowering yourself, having that confidence in your fueling choices and knowing that you're making the right decisions for you go a really long way in this sport. So all that to say, there are a lot of topics I'm hoping to cover over the course of this podcast. A lot of those are related to busting nutrition myths, building healthy relationships with food, navigating social media and misinformation out there. Then I also want to talk about things like Red S or losing your period, you know, how to recover from those things, how to get your period back, how to stay healthy and find longevity in this sport, you know, healthier ways to achieve your goals and stay involved in this sport for a long time without experiencing burnout or injury. Recovering from injuries, staying fueled and motivated while you're injured. You know, that's something, unfortunately, a lot of runners can relate to, is how do we come back from these injuries and, you know, stay healthy, stay the course, and trust the process when it can be really difficult. So I'm really excited to bring you guys a lot of great conversations. We already have some really exciting guests coming up on the podcast. And basically, the way I'm going to do this is every other week, you'll be hearing from me by myself, like this episode, a solo episode where I'm actually going to be answering questions from you guys. So I will be opening up a place on my website, fuelingforward.com, where you can go and submit your nutrition questions. And I'm going to be answering those on air. I think it's going to be really fun. I'm going to try and make it really interactive and just, you know, again, be a place for you guys to get your nutrition questions answered. I also want to share your stories. If you have a story that you would like to share anonymously or otherwise, please feel free to share that on my website as well. You can also just DM me on Instagram at @fueling_forward with something that you'd like for me to share, and I can read that on air as well. The other weeks where it's not a solo episode will be an interview episode with another runner. So I'm sure you've heard several podcasts that talk to runners about their experience with running. We're going to get a little more niche with it. We're going to talk about people's experiences with nutrition in the sport, because I have not come across a single runner who doesn't have something to contribute to the conversation about sports nutrition. Again, whether it's positive or negative experience, there's something that we can take away from every runner's encounter with nutrition. So I'm really excited to be sharing a lot of incredible runners' stories with you. I'm hoping that you'll learn a lot, gain a lot of confidence from this podcast, and again, just understand that the right way to do things can look different from person to person. So here we go. Thank you guys for being here, and welcome again to the very first episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. All right, so I want to start by introducing you to me, to Maddie Alm, the runner and dietitian behind this podcast, and I want to tell you guys my personal story about how I got into running, and also my story about how I got into nutrition, because that's something I'm going to be asking all of my guests. So I want you guys to hear my version. So I got into running, I would say, later in the sport compared to a lot of people that I've competed against throughout my career. I did not start running until my junior year of high school, when I switched from soccer to running. A big reason why I made that transition was, I mean, first of all, because I don't think I was actually that good at soccer. I was just good at the running part. But the second reason why I made that transition is because I loved the objectivity of running. I think with soccer, you have tryouts, you have people who are essentially judging you, and I didn't always feel like who made which team was based on who you are as an athlete or your skill set. A lot of times it was political, who you knew, who your parents knew, which club team you were on, and that was always really frustrating to me. So immediately what I loved about running was that if you're doing the work, if you're showing up, if you're running hard and you're beating people, you're earning your spot. And it's not a spot that's guaranteed to you throughout the whole season. You have to continue to show up, continue to earn that varsity spot, continue to work hard. So immediately I loved that aspect of running. And I think a lot of us as runners who are the type A, high achiever, perfectionist type people really thrive on that concept that if we do the work, we get to reap the benefits. And that is something that's straightforward about running that I love. So I fell in love with running. I ran throughout my junior and senior year. My high school cross-country team, Monarch High School in Louisville, Colorado, we were actually the first team from our high school to make it to Nike Cross Nationals, which was a really incredible experience. I just felt like every season of all the four seasons that I was running in high school, I continued to improve. And it felt like there was a lot of untapped potential there for me. But the idea of running in college was really intimidating. I wasn't really sure if it was something that I actually wanted to do. A lot of my teammates who were seniors were looking at colleges, they were getting recruited, and I didn't really have any standout times. I wasn't really actively being recruited by any colleges, so I didn't really know that I had the option to run in college. So instead of choosing a college based on their running team, I chose a college based on where I would be happy. And that is one thing I will say, if you are a young runner who is interested in running at the collegiate level, just know that there are a lot of different ways to achieve that. It doesn't have to be one path. It doesn't have to be D1. There are walk-on options. At the end of the day, I think it's most important to choose a school where you would be happy whether or not you're running. Because with the sport of running, we have injuries, we have setbacks, we have times where we have to take a step back from running. And if you're only there because of the running program, it can be really lonely and isolating when you're dealing with challenges in the sport. So for me personally, choosing to go to the University of Colorado in Boulder, which is where I ended up, was purely based on the environment. And of course, there's a middle ground. You know, you can choose a school where you're going there for the running, but you would also be happy outside of running. For me, I primarily chose it just based on the school. It had the major that I was interested in, which was pre-med, and that's kind of where I wanted to go. So, you know, to set my sights on going to the University of Colorado, My assistant coach at Monarch had a connection with Mark Wetmore, the coach at CU at the time, and so he offered to put me in touch with him, maybe reach out about an invited walk-on spot. So I did end up getting offered what's called an invited walk-on position, where you get to be on the team, but you're not on a scholarship. I ran for a week and I actually hated it, which most people don't know this about me. I actually quit the team and took my entire freshman year of college off of running. It was definitely really enjoyable to have a freshman year where I could just focus on school and making friends and adjusting to life on campus, because that transition from high school to college is hard in and of itself without adding in collegiate athletics. So for me, that was just a little too much initially. I didn't enjoy it. But finishing up my freshman year, I realized I was really missing running. I was missing the team aspect. I was missing competing. So I decided I wanted to walk back on to the CU team. And I reached back out to Mark, who told me that this time I had to do a time trial at their home race to try to make the team. I had to run a specific time. So I trained all summer with my high school coach, Kent Reeder, and then Laura Thweet, who, spoiler alert, you guys will actually be hearing from next week. She started assistant coaching at my high school, at Monarch High School. So her and Kent were writing my training for me. I was running and training all summer, you know, working my jobs, all those things. Come September, I show up to the time trial. My parents drive me and by myself, and I made the team. I ran the time I needed to. I made the team. I would say my sophomore year of college was a pretty difficult transition. The team wasn't a super welcoming environment. I personally didn't know a ton about running at the time. I definitely was the slowest person on the team. I didn't really have anybody to train with. And it was difficult. You know, I was dealing with a lot of things like low iron, chronic shin splints. And in hindsight, I know that I was under fueling and just didn't understand that at the time. But it was definitely difficult. You know, it was a difficult adjustment. But to me, I was loving running. I think having that break my freshman year really allowed me to rediscover my love for the sport. It helped me to have a bit of a break, step back a bit so that I wasn't so burnt out. And I was able to continue to show up every day and work my hardest. And, you know, that looked different than what my teammates were doing because I was so much slower than everybody else. But I really focused on what can I do today to be a better runner. And I was having fun with it. I think that's something that we forget in this sport. It's supposed to be fun. And so throughout my time on the team, my sophomore year, I started working my way up a little bit. I was running the 1500, so I was able to run some PRs, which was always exciting and motivating. Anytime you do something you've never done before, it makes you think, well, what if I can do more? What if there's more in there? So my 1500 meter PR at the end of my sophomore year was 4:53, so that's about a 5:15-ish mile, give or take. Definitely nothing stand out. Definitely nothing that would, you know, get me a varsity spot on the team. My junior year, I continued to see improvement. I ended up getting invited to compete on the conference team, where I finished seventh on the team for cross country, and that was my highest finish to date. I started to see a lot of potential in myself that I hadn't seen before, and I was really steadily working my way up. Now I had people to train with, I had people to do my longer runs with, and at the end of my junior track season, I brought my 1500 PR down to 4:37. Then I went into my fourth season, where I ended up becoming a varsity member of the cross country team. We ended up finishing seventh at NCAAs, and I finished 51st as an individual, which is about 10 spots off of being an All-American. And that was a big awakening moment for me. I was like, wow, I could become an All-American. And that title to me meant so much at the time, where it was just this, you know, story of walk on to All-American. That just would really be the cherry on top of all this work that I've been putting in. End of my senior year season in track, I ended up running in the 420s and the 1500. So I was really starting to stand out as a runner. At some point in there, I did end up having my first experience with nutrition. CU hired a dietitian, and I went into her office not really knowing what to expect, because in my mind, I didn't have anything I needed to work on with my nutrition. There wasn't really anything I was struggling with. I had a good relationship with food. I didn't really think that seeing a dietitian was something that I needed to do. One of the things she had me do was add a chocolate milk in between our workout and our lift. We used to go straight from a big track session into the gym to lift. I would be exhausted. I could barely pick up a weight, let alone bike home after practice. You know, it was just exhausting. So she had me add this chocolate milk in, and all of a sudden I could lift heavier. I could recover better. And because I could lift heavier and recover better, I was starting to get stronger and stay healthier and get faster. And it's so funny looking back because that one chocolate milk changed the trajectory of my entire career as a runner and as a dietitian. That moment is what inspired me to pursue nutrition. I was like, that was so simple. That was such a simple change, but it made a big enough difference that I was able to, you know, become almost an All-American in that cross-country season. That was just a huge light bulb moment where I was like, what else could I do differently to allow me to achieve greater things in the sport? So I was really motivated by chocolate milk. That was the one shift that always will stand out in my mind that made a huge difference. By the end of my fourth year, Mark and Heather ended up offering me a scholarship, a full ride scholarship, and the ability to stay for a fifth year. That was just an exciting moment for me, just a real full circle moment where I had really pulled myself up by my bootstraps, walked on, earned my way onto a scholarship, and added a fifth year to my program. And this was when I decided I'm going to become a dietitian. So I added another major. I added psychology. I was also doing pre-med. There was a lot going on at that point, and I did end up having a bone-related injury right before my fifth year cross-country season, which was really devastating. And I was terrified that I wasn't going to be able to come back and achieve what was now at this point my greatest goal of becoming an All-American. But because I had started working with this dietitian, I was learning more about fueling. I was really trying to do a better job of balancing recovery with everything else that I had going on, getting more sleep, eating more consistently, all of those things. I was able to come back that fall and have a great cross-country season. We ended up finishing as the runners-up in the NCAA, so we finished second as a team. I just missed that All-American top 41. I finished 47th, which is like a matter of seconds in NCAA cross country. There's just so many people in there. But it really fired me up for my fifth year, where I was like, this is it. My fifth year track season, this is it. I'm going to become an All-American. And I think something that had held me back previously throughout college was my mindset. I think I struggled with that imposter syndrome of feeling like I was still that walk-on who was the slowest on the team and that I didn't belong there. I didn't belong on the start line. I didn't, you know, belong up there at the front of the race or finishing at the front of the race. And I think mentally I held myself back a lot because I just was intimidated. I was scared. I didn't feel like I belonged there. And when I had only one semester left, one track season left to achieve my biggest goal, I felt this switch go off in my mind where I was like, this is it. This is your one shot. This is a do or die thing. If you're going to be an All-American, this is your only chance. You've worked this hard. What do you have to lose? Just go for it. And I started racing with a lot more confidence. I started, again, focusing more on those things outside of running that would give me that extra percentage at the end of the race to put myself in that All-American category instead of being a few seconds on the outside of it. And I ended up qualifying for NCAAs my fifth year in the 1500. At NCAAs, I made the final and I ran a 4:13 1500. So it was a huge, huge, huge shift throughout my collegiate career. My ability to achieve these goals that I didn't even have my sophomore year, I didn't even think were on the radar for me. But I truly believe that the reason I was able to see that trajectory in my collegiate career was learning about nutrition. And that, again, is what inspired me to become a dietitian. So after college, I did continue to run. I trained with a coach out in San Diego, Joaquin Cruz, who was an incredible coach. He trained me more like a sprinter, which was really fun, but my body didn't respond as well to that. And then when I came back to Boulder for the summer, I connected with Joe and Emma, who I had trained with at CU, Joe Bossard and Emma Coburn. They had just started Team Boss. My now husband, Nick Harris, was on the team. It was a pretty small group, and they let me kind of come to practices over the summer. And at the end of the summer, I asked Joe, hey, would you be willing to coach me? He agreed to, which was incredible, and I had an amazing, I think it was 5 years actually, that I trained with and competed with Team Boss. again, saw tons of improvements, you know, had some ups and downs with injuries, but I did learn, continue to learn more about fueling for performance as a post-collegiate, and ended up making it to the Olympic trials in 2021, where I made the 5K final, got my 5K PR down from, you know, 16:15-ish in college to 15:19, which qualified me for the trials, and ended up placing, you know, 12th overall in the U.S. at that level. And again, those are just things I never, it's even crazy to say them out loud now, because I just sometimes can't believe that that's where I ended up in the sport. Just looking back at my origin story, I just wouldn't have thought I could be here. And so I just wanted to tell you guys my story, because I think you can take away from it that anything truly is possible. You don't have a limitation in the sport. If you learn how to take care of your body, train in a way that's sustainable and consistent, and the more consistency you can string together with your training, there's no stopping you. There's no ceiling on where you can get. And to me, unlocking that full potential really originated in fueling changes. So with that, I wanted to talk also about becoming a dietitian. So when I decided that I wanted to become a dietitian, I didn't know a ton about that, the career path at the time. It was a lot of work, I will say, and I didn't know all of that when I decided to get into it. I wouldn't change a thing about it, but it's a lot of work. And I also want to say that because dietitians are very different from nutritionists. The training that I had to go through as a dietitian is very different than what would allow you to become a nutritionist. So when I was at CU, they actually did not have a nutrition major. So I double majored in pre-med and psychology. So to be a dietitian, you have to take all of those basic science-related classes like chemistry and anatomy, physiology, physics, all of those really challenging classes. And then you get into what's called a didactic program. So it's a written program for dietitians, and you have to take, you know, certain classes that teach you about nutritional sciences. So after CU, my path was to go to San Diego State, where I got my master's in nutritional sciences while taking the didactic program. So those undergrad classes that you need to get your certificate to go on to then do your residency program to be a dietitian. It's all very confusing. So I got my master's degree in nutritional sciences, all while taking those undergrad classes that CU didn't offer. So those are things like clinical nutrition, where you learn how to manage medical conditions with nutrition. Medical nutrition therapy is what it's called. You learn about creating budgets, how to balance menus for public schools. That one's like a puzzle. It's insane how much work goes into creating lunch menus at public schools. And we had to learn about food service, how to navigate food safety. When you become a dietitian, there's just so many things that you have to learn that I never would have imagined I'd be studying. One of my favorite classes was food science, and we had a food lab where we learned the science of cooking and baking and what happens if you mix this with this or you forget this ingredient. That was super fun. I will say I didn't love my 9 a.m. fish lab, but the ice cream making lab was probably my favorite. Really cool stuff. Just so many fun things that I got to learn that I didn't know about the umbrella that is nutritional sciences. It covers so many different topics. And so I did ultimately decide I wanted to take the dietitian path, which means that you have to do an accredited dietetic internship. And this really is more of a residency program. You're working 40 hours a week. You have to complete 1,200 hours of supervised practice in a variety of fields under dietitians. The program I ended up being a part of was at Lipscomb University, and I chose their sports nutrition track. So I got to do 10 weeks in their athletic department working with athletes, primarily with the track and cross country athletes. Then I did rotations in, you know, community settings, so WIC, Women, Infants, and Children. I did a rotation in a house for developmentally disabled adults, teaching them how to cook and grocery shop. I did 3 months of rotations in a clinical setting in a hospital, rotating through different departments like the ICU, burn unit, diabetes, outpatient, a lot of different areas there. And then, you know, you finish up your certificate, then you have to pass a licensure exam. And once you get your license, you have to continue to do continuing education and reach a certain number of credits every 5 years. The cycle kind of starts over. So it was a total of about 9 years that it took me to become a dietitian. And a nutritionist doesn't have any of those requirements. There's no requirement for even having studied nutrition at all in school. You can essentially pay for a certificate online. And there are different levels of nutritionists. There are some nutritionists that have more background in nutritional sciences than others, but there's just no way to know by the title nutritionist. It's not a regulated title. So that's where I would say looking for somebody who's a registered dietitian or an RD means that they've dedicated a lot of time to learning about nutritional sciences, how to interpret research, how to apply research to the populations that they work with. And those are the people that are likely going to give you a lot better, a lot more accurate nutrition advice. So that's just my soapbox on what it means to be a dietitian, what I went through to become a dietitian. And ultimately, when I finished up with all of that, I started my business Fueling Forward. Initially, I wanted to work in a collegiate setting, but I soon learned that the way budgets work there doesn't really favor the work I wanted to do. I wanted to really work with at-risk athletes like the cross-country runners or the track runners, gymnastics teams, that kind of stuff. But because those aren't the teams making the money, you know, you're spending most of your time with football, with basketball, and you're basically just making smoothies for them. You're doing Costco runs. And I was like, I didn't go to school for 9 years to make smoothies. So no, that's not what I want to do anymore. But instead, I saw this huge gap in nutrition resources specifically for runners. And something for me that was always important was that people that I'm working with, practitioners that I'm working with, understand the sport of running. I think there's a lot of practitioners who, you know, are well-meaning, but don't really get what it means to train as a runner. And because I've trained at a lot of different levels, I felt like that was something I could bring to the table that some other dietitians maybe couldn't. And so that's where the idea for Fueling Forward, my private practice, was born. I work primarily with endurance-based athletes, mostly with runners, to help them learn how to fuel for performance in a way that makes sense for them, learn what their specific nutrition needs are, how to implement small changes like adding that chocolate milk that was so life-changing for me, just little things and making it more simple. I think most of us tend to overthink nutrition, make it more complicated than it needs to be. So that's kind of what I do in my practice. I also work with athletes who struggle with disordered eating and eating disorders, who are trying to recover from REDS or REDS. So I love what I do. I think it's just so fun to get to learn new things, to challenge myself, to challenge my athletes, to find an approach to fueling that's really going to work well for them. I think every athlete I work with is like solving a unique puzzle. And I just love it. I love connecting with other athletes. I love hearing athletes' stories. And I have so much overlap in my clients where I'll hear an athlete tell me a story and I'll immediately think of an athlete that I met with, you know, the day before who had a similar story. And again, that's sort of where the idea for this podcast was born. I just want to create a place where these athletes can hear each other's stories and can understand that they're not alone in these challenges. And there's a community out there who wants to learn and make changes in a sustainable way. And I also want to give back to this sport that has given me so much. I quote unquote retired from professional running this past summer. And I think this is a really fun way for me to stay involved in the sport and to continue to give back to the sport that really created the life that I have now. I met my husband through running. I found my passion for nutrition through running. I've made lifelong friends through running. So it's just truly something I could not be more passionate about, combined with something else I'm so passionate about, which is nutrition. So again, thank you guys for being here. I want to wrap up on a light note. Something I'm going to be doing at the end of all of my interview episodes is asking athletes I talk to these fun rapid-fire questions. So I'm going to answer them for myself so you guys know what my answers would be when you're hearing other athletes answer them. So the first question is, what is your go-to pre-run snack? For me, I love an English muffin with butter and jam. It just tastes so good to me every time and always settles really well. If I have a bigger or longer run or I have a little more time and need more, my second favorite thing would be a cinnamon raisin bagel with butter. Those just, again, always taste so good to me. The next question is, what would you pick for your quote-unquote last meal? For me, I would probably pick sushi. I love sushi. I really love any Asian cuisine. You can't go wrong. Ramen, Thai, any of those things I love. But I would say I would probably pick sushi, and specifically like a salmon avocado cucumber roll with salmon and tuna nigiri, some miso soup, some edamame. Yummy. So good. Third question is, what is your favorite dessert? Mine is ice cream. Always has been, always will be. I'm obsessed with ice cream. I love it. One fun fact about me is that I actually had ice cream the night before my Olympic trials 5K, and I had a fantastic race, probably the best race of my career, and made the final. So just another quick fact for you guys. You don't have to avoid dessert. It's not going to make you a worse athlete, and in some cases, it can even make you a better one. So ice cream for the win. The next question is, what is your least favorite food? I have three, I would say, fairly controversial least favorite foods. So the first one is goat cheese. Cannot. I don't know what it is, that flavor every time. Ugh, not for me. The second thing is beets. Same thing with beets. And I don't know what it is, but so many salads are a combination of beets and goat cheese, and it's truly just my nightmare salad. So I don't like either of those. And the third thing is sweet potatoes. I actually don't like sweet potatoes. I prefer regular potatoes. I'm a regular potato gal all the way. Don't like sweet potato fries. Don't like mashed sweet potatoes. Don't like sweet potato pancakes. Don't like any of it. I like regular old potatoes for me. The next question is, if you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go? This sort of ties into my last meal question. I would go to Japan, hands down. I've always wanted to go to Japan specifically for the food. You know, sushi, fish, rice and noodle dishes, all those things I'm obsessed with. And I think it would be so cool to get to try them in a very authentic setting. The next question is, what is your go-to lazy meal? I have two go-to lazy meals. The first one is chili. Chili is so easy. You can throw a bunch of things in there, make a really big pot. It lasts for multiple days. Super easy. Also super cheap. Checks all my boxes. The other one is something called a broccoli sausage pasta. So it, just like it sounds, it's pasta that is a one pot meal with broccoli and sausage. Super easy to make. Again, makes a lot of food. Checks all my carb, color, and protein boxes in one. So doesn't get much easier than that. And my final question is, what is your favorite coffee or tea drink? So fun fact about my husband Nick and I, we are obsessed with coffee. You should see our coffee routine. It looks like a science experiment going on. We have a hand grinder, we have a scale, we have a Chemex and the whole system where we have to use a chopstick because our Chemex broke, so we're using not a real Chemex. And anyway, it's a whole system. But I love our coffee in the morning. I think it is so, I love the flavors of coffee. I love warm coffee, and I just like it as it is, straight up. If I'm getting a drink at a like coffee shop or restaurant, cappuccino is my go-to, and I like it with more foam and less milk. All right, so again, thank you all for being here in this very first episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. Next week, you can hear an interview with Laura Thweet, a professional runner for Saucony. She shares her story going from high school to collegiate athletics to her 10-year professional career as a marathoner. So be sure to tune in. Episodes will be releasing on Fridays. I'm going to call those Fueling Forward Fridays. So again, thank you all for being here. Please make sure to share this podcast with your friends if you think they would like it. Like, subscribe, all those things people are always talking about to help this podcast get off the ground. Thank you all again, and I'm looking forward to next Fueling Forward Friday. Thank you.